All right, Marshall, if you can go ahead and call the next case, please.
Case A23-0591, State of Minnesota versus Curtis Allen Dahl.
Good morning and welcome to the Court of Appeals Zoom edition. Each counsel, appreciate your briefs today. You will each have 15 minutes for your argument. Appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. And can you each see the clock on your screen?
I can.
Excellent. Okay, great. So please keep an eye on that clock. And appellant's counsel, when you're ready, you may proceed.
Thank you and good morning. May it please the court, counsel, my name is Christopher Cato. I represent the appellant Curtis Dahl in this matter. I'm not sure that I've appeared in front of any of you before, so it's nice to meet you. There are a lot of issues I concede in my brief. It's a little bit unusual for me in my appellate practice to raise this many issues, but when we're dealing with number one, some issues that I think us justice partners here could use some guidance from the court, as well as just some relief for my client, as well as kind of a totality of the circumstances analysis, I thought it was necessary to raise all of those, but I'm not going to hit on all of them here today unless, of course, the court wants to direct my attention to specific things. I'm going to hit on more of the bigger issues. So kind of starting with the circumstantial evidence issue, specifically with regard to the fleeing charge. Obviously, the elements of fleeing are that somebody fled in a motor vehicle, peace officer was acting in the lawful discharge of an official duty, an appellant knew or should have known that it was, in fact, a peace officer and that it took place in Otter Tail County. I understand there's some kind of argument from respondent that venue is not part of the case or not one of the elements. I'm not going to get into the weeds on that. I think the case law right now is clear. But with regard to the remaining issues, I want to start with kind of three broad statements that I don't believe are truly controverted in this matter. And the first one is that Roberts County, the individuals that were from Roberts County, South Dakota, are not officers under Minnesota law. Number two, that Roberts County was therefore not discharging an official duty. And number three, that as a result of that, the pursuit of appellant's vehicle was in fact unlawful in these circumstances. So with regard to the Roberts County individuals, first, we don't know how many. We don't know how many squad cars. We don't know how many purported deputies they were.
So I understand your argument. Person breaks the law in South Dakota, gets into a high-speed pursuit in South Dakota, crosses the border into Minnesota. The pursuing officers from South Dakota are acting unlawfully by continuing the pursuit. Do I understand that argument to be the one
that is my argument, and that is the way the statute that my client has been charged under reads, right? Because in order to be fleeing in Minnesota, under subdivision 2-3 of Minnesota statute 609.487, it requires that the individual be a member of a duly organized state or county law enforcement agency.
But I'm getting to you had said that the pursuit, unless I misunderstood you, the pursuit by the South Dakota law enforcement officers is unlawful.
Yes.
In Minnesota.
I believe that could be the case.
And what's the basis for that?
Well, maybe I could answer that question with another question. We don't, the record is silent on why South Dakota is pursuing appellant's vehicle, and we are unclear whether or not those individuals were licensed law enforcement officers.
Let's assume for the sake of argument that the Minnesota officers believe the South Dakota officers to be lawfully licensed in South Dakota, and that it wasn't illegal for them to continue the pursuit in Minnesota, or to ask for the assistance of Minnesota officers. So I'm trying to...
I follow you.
Your view is that the assistance by the Minnesota officers is unlawful.
I think that the assistance by Minnesota officers would not be unlawful so long as Minnesota officers took over control of that pursuit.
Why would they have to take over control of the pursuit? Why wouldn't their participation in trying to apprehend your client be sufficient to be exercising their lawful authority in Minnesota, whether it was initiated in Minnesota or their actions were on behalf of assistance to another law enforcement agency in another state.
Well, there certainly may be circumstances where that's the case, but I would suggest that the record in this case doesn't support or doesn't track those steps, right? Because we don't have answers to whether these South Dakota individuals were licensed peace officers. We don't have record or any information of what this vehicle or this driver had done that may or may not have been illegal in South Dakota. And we don't know, I'll say the record is silent as to whether or not this vehicle violated on any Minnesota laws, with the exception of perhaps driving on a rim, which I could get to in a little bit. But the point, I think, under the statute, under the very clear statute, is that in order for South Dakota to engage in this pursuit in Minnesota, to be a peace officer under the definition of the statute, certain requirements needed to be met. And the record is either entirely silent as to those elements or is contrary to those elements. To be granted full arrest powers in Minnesota, in order to be a peace officer by statute, for appellant to have fled those peace officers, they had to be granted full arrest powers. I'll focus on that. The first two prongs, being member of a duly organized state or county law enforcement agency and being charged with a duty to prevent and detect crime, I will say we don't have record to support those findings. But if we gloss over those and we say, well, by title, they appear to be, they certainly were not granted full arrest powers in Minnesota because Minnesota has a statute that controls that, and that's 626.77 subdivision 1. First, the foreign officer must be on duty. We don't have record of that. For all we know, appellant's vehicle passed an off-duty officer on his way home in his squad car at a high rate of speed, and he decided to try and stop him. Subdivision 1.1. They have to be acting at the request of a Minnesota peace officer, and under subdivision 1.2, they have to act under direction of that Minnesota peace officer, and then under subdivision 1.3, they have to act in accordance with the rules and regulations of their own department. Then again, we don't have any record to suggest any of these conditions were met, and because of that, that element that appellant was fleeing a peace officer cannot legally be found or have been found by a jury in these circumstances. That is an element of the offense. They had to find that that appellant failed to stop for a peace officer and that peace officer was lawfully discharging a lawful duty. So those elements can't be met based on the evidence that was presented in court, and certainly not under a circumstantial evidence analysis. We have clear that Officer O'Leary testified he was supposed to help the deputy from Roberts County. That's in the transcript at 76, and that he joined in behind Roberts County. That's in the transcript at 77. We don't have any information about any type of communication between these agencies. We don't have any information that would suggest that Minnesota obtained their own reasonable and articulable suspicion to stop this vehicle for criminal activity in Minnesota. And so I think that's a problem with the case. And I Officer O'Leary, if we just take out the South Dakota officers, which I think we have to do by the statutory definition of a peace officer, because they can't meet those elements.
Well, counsel, but the statute also talks about an officer from another state. So, I mean, here we have South Dakota officers chasing somebody. And then is it just a race to the border? And once you get to the border, Minnesota law enforcement needs their own probable cause to continue a pursuit?
I believe they do to be charged under the statute, they would. Because the definition does talk about officers from another state, but they have to be granted full arrest powers. That's under subdivision, I believe, 2.3, the third element. So that is an important phrase. They were granted full arrest powers, and being granted full arrest powers is defined under Minnesota law. There are conditions that must be met, and those are the conditions that I just talked about. That's under Minnesota statute 626.77 subdivision 1. And I cited a case of mine from some years ago in which this became an issue. A Minnesota State Patrol officer attempted to stop my client, but it turned out he was a motor vehicle inspector. He had a law enforcement vehicle. He wore a badge. He had the uniform, but he was not granted full arrest powers, and therefore, he lacked the ability to stop my client's vehicle.
Can you assume for a moment that the South Dakota officers vanished in the thin air, and that only Officer O'Leary was there? And at that moment, your client crashes into the ditch. Officer O'Leary would have authority to arrest your client.
I think he would have authority to investigate a crime at that stage. The question here is whether he would have lawful authority to stop my client in those circumstances.
He was engaged in a pursuit already. Officer O'Leary participated in the pursuit.
In the facts of this case, certainly. Certainly he was engaged at some point. I mean, I'm not disputing that. The question is whether or not under the facts and the circumstances of this case, there was proof that my client knew he was there. And that's why I'm saying if we ignore the South Dakota officers, which I think we have to do, that leaves only Officer O'Leary. But the problem with the evidence before the court and the jury was that Officer O'Leary, by his own testimony, was quite some distance away. At one point, he said when the vehicle's tire came off, he and I quote, even being as far behind as I was, he could smell the hot rubber. So he's acknowledging he was a very far distance away. And I think that's consistent with the fact that he's the one that originally put down the stop sticks. There would have been some time to retrieve those, to get back in his car, to get caught up. And when we look at Exhibit 2, we see these vehicles are quite some distance behind. We just don't know which of any of them are Minnesota law enforcement vehicles in that video. But again, the evidence that we have is quite deficient on where Minnesota was in proximity to this vehicle. And when we look at when he arrived at the scene of the wreck, he was so far behind that this individual was already out into a farm field far enough away that the officer didn't give chase. And in all the years of handling these types of cases, I can't think of a single case where law enforcement just threw up their hands and said, I'm not going to bother chasing them. And we have to remember, there was a significant amount of time that passed just based on the circumstances of the wreck, right? This vehicle was tipped on its side, which means the individuals leaving that vehicle would have to climb out against gravity, open those doors against gravity in order to get out, get on their feet, and then take off running.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
The stop sticks were deployed multiple times in Minnesota.
Yes.
Why wouldn't that fact alone be sufficient to put your client on notice that he's being pursued not only by South Dakota, but also Minnesota officers?
Well, I think the issue is one of again, going back to lawful authority to make that stop and to engage in the acts that they engaged in. So if South Dakota didn't have lawful authority to pursue appellant in Minnesota, they also wouldn't have had lawful authority, for example, to put on down stop sticks. So it's really a legal analysis that we're raising here. Ultimately, it's our position that the actions of South Dakota
that's different from the question I'm asking you. You were a moment ago speaking of the fact that you said there was no reason why your client had no reason to believe that Minnesota officers were engaged in the pursuit. And under one interpretation of the facts, the officers had a lawful duty to and the right to assist South Dakota officers in stopping or any vehicle stopping any vehicle driving at that speed. And once the speed sticks were placed in Minnesota, why wouldn't your client recognize or have reason to recognize he's being pursued not only by South Dakota, but by Minnesota?
I think we certainly can conclude that the individual would have reason to know that Minnesota attempted to stop them using stop sticks. I don't know that we can reasonably conclude that the driver would know that behind them were in fact Minnesota officers. The individual putting out stop sticks would necessarily be outside of their car. So I don't know that we can logically reach that conclusion. If I could turn to, and I see I'm running very short on time, and we spent considerable time on that point. And I do want to just touch just very quickly on the sentencing issue, because this is a very important one to me and my client, and I think just Minnesota in general. With regard to the sentencing, I want to make very clear what the argument is. And I think we can compare the sentence on count one and count two to really demonstrate what the issue is. On count one, fleeing, it's a felony. We're not we don't sentence somebody to the maximum period possible by law of 3 years on this particular offense, and then stay all 3 years and say, you're going to be on probation for the maximum period of time. That wouldn't be permissible under our current sentencing guidelines or our current jurisprudence. But what we do see is what happened in count two, which is he's found guilty of a gross misdemeanor. We impose the maximum possible penalty of 365 days and the maximum probationary period without making any findings to justify that particular sentencing. So I know respondent had some confusion about what I was arguing there. That is precisely it. And I think in that hypothetical, we know and we can fairly say that it would be improper to impose the maximum possible consequence for a felony, yet we do it every day on misdemeanors and gross misdemeanors. And I'm challenging that issue in the facts of this case and just broadly in Minnesota, because it is a continual sentencing paradigm that I think needs to be addressed by the court, because it doesn't track felonies. And I don't see a reason why we'd sentence misdemeanors and gross misdemeanors worse than felonies. And I see my time is concluded here.
All right. Thank you, counsel. You will have 5 minutes on rebuttal. Counsel for respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors. Morning, counsel. And may it please the court. My name is Ed Stockmeyer. I'm an assistant attorney general appearing this morning on behalf of respondent, the state of Minnesota. I guess I will cut just sort of to the heart of, or at least what I see to be the heart of Mr. Kadem's argument about the authority of the South Dakota deputies. And I think the easiest way to explain appellant's argument is that he's really focused on the word or the phrase granted full powers of arrest in the felony fleeing statute. That's subdivision 2.3 of the felony fleeing statute. And the error that appellant is making is appellant is reading that to say granted full powers of arrest by Minnesota authorities. We read it to say granted full powers of arrest in the jurisdiction that they're coming from. In essence, they are full-fledged peace officers in their jurisdiction. So when appellant wraps in this other statute, 626.77, which details when people have authority to arrest under Minnesota law, that is not what the phrase granted full powers of arrest in the felony fleeing statute refers to. The felony fleeing statute is going back to authorities given by the law of the jurisdiction where you're coming from. And that's supported textually if you read this whole subdivision 2.3, it talks about a member of a duly organized state, county, or municipal law enforcement agency charged with the duty to prevent and detect crime and generally enforce criminal laws. This is all about authorities granted to them by the licensing authorities in that state. So that's, I think, just cuts to the heart of the argument. This statute does not wrap in 626.77. Those are not elements that the state has to prove felony fleeing. But I want to raise an additional argument about this felony fleeing claim, and that is that appellant, I think, forfeited this argument. 626.77 is not cited in appellant's principal brief. The principal brief admits that the officers from South Dakota were deputies from South Dakota, and then it argues that they are not peace officers under the felony fleeing statute because they were not licensed by the Minnesota Post Board. That's why when appellant block quoted in his principal brief, subdivision 2.1 from the felony fleeing statute, he underlined the phrase Minnesota Peace Officer Standards and Training Board. That was his argument. He was only looking at subdivision 2.1. And then after our response, we get a new argument that's about the phrase granted full powers of arrest in subdivision 2.3 and then attempting to wrap in 626.77. So I think this is just a wholly new argument. We're dealing with a shifting goalpost of what the state has to respond to. And so I don't even think it's been properly preserved for this court to respond. But if the court does want to address that issue, again, our position is granted full powers of arrest in subdivision 2.3 refers to powers given by the jurisdiction from which the officer is coming, not granted by Minnesota law. On the sentencing Or I guess I would also just like to address a couple other points that counsel made on the sufficiency of felony fleeing. Counsel repeatedly referred to or suggested that these officers didn't have any authority because of their status under the law to even stop appellant. But there's no challenge to the stop here. The question is, were there peace officers pursuing? Did the defendant know about that? And did he knowingly fail to pull over? It is just not a question in terms of sufficiency of proof, whether the stop was lawful or not. If appellant wanted to challenge the stop, he could have done so and then raised that issue on appeal. He hasn't done so. The other point I would like to make is just to highlight for the court some of the facts that proved that these deputies were peace officers under Minnesota law. I fully acknowledge the South Dakota officers didn't testify. So they didn't testify that they were granted certain powers by their licensing board in that state. And so we're really relying on circumstantial evidence. And what we have is Officer O'Leary was speaking with them, or at least hearing their communications. He testified that they were deputies. He used that word on two occasions. That's pages 76 and 77 of the transcript. Several other vehicles pulled over for the pursuing officers, which goes to state of mind. Everyone else on the road understood that these were officers attempting to make a stop. You have the Deputy Sprout squad video, which shows four squad cars all within a very close proximity of appellant's car. You have the sort of really egregious and outrageous driving conduct. It's the type of conduct you would only expect to see from somebody who is trying to evade law enforcement. And then you have the fact that with respect to Deputy O'Leary, he actually wasn't far back. He testified that when the tire came off, or when the wheel came off the tire, he saw sparks flying. That's from pages 78 to 79. So he's right there within that sort of squadron of vehicles we're pursuing appellant. And so that's the circumstantial evidence we're relying on for the fact that these were fully fledged South Dakota law enforcement officers, and that appellant knew that they were fully fledged law enforcement officers. The final point I'd like to make.
Counsel, what do you think of appellant's argument that, assuming South Dakota officers are not, you know, granted full arrest power in Minnesota, but then do Minnesota officers need to come up with their own probable cause when they hear they're being, you know, there's a chase being pursued and now it's entered into Minnesota's jurisdiction?
Your Honor, I think it's safe. What I would say is, if they've been told by law enforcement officers in another state that they are actively pursuing somebody and that person is refusing to stop, and that chase continues into Minnesota, the Minnesota officers can rely on what they've been told about what's going on from the out-of-state officers. So Deputy O'Leary doesn't need to personally observe a particular infraction to pull Mr. Dahl over. He just has to know there's been an offense and there's a chase, and so I need to pull him over and I need to investigate. So it's sort of, I guess
so,
I'm
and but, so in other words, to paraphrase your argument, are you suggesting that those collective knowledge rule applies when we're talking about situations involving multiple borders, multiple jurisdictions?
That's a much better way of saying it, Your Honor. Yes. Collective knowledge doctrine is the word I should have used. So again, I also I want to reiterate that I actually don't think under the felony fleeing statute and the sufficiency argument, whether the state proved it at trial, that the state has to prove that it was a lawful stop. That's just not part of what the statute requires. The final point I wanted to make this morning was on the sentencing issue that counsel touched on for the last moment of his argument. And it sounds a little bit to me like counsel is arguing that this court should come up with some sort of guidelines for non-felony sentencing. I don't know that this court has the authority to do that. I don't know what the source of law is that counsel is relying on to say that the non-felony sentence that was imposed exceeded what we should deem to be the presumptive sentence for a non-felony offense. I just don't know where any of those arguments come from. They sound like great policy arguments for the legislature or the Sentencing Guidelines Commission, but I don't think they're anything for this court to deal with. So unless this court has any further questions, we simply just ask this court to affirm Mr. Dahl's convictions and sentences. Thank you.
I'm not seeing any other questions from the panel, so thank you, counsel. Counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. I'll just kind of go through the issues raised in order. The first issue that the state raises in response to our argument is that the definition of full arrest powers is controlled by the forum jurisdictions, rules, regulations, or law, not Minnesota's. And I think it would be a very unusual circumstance for a Minnesota statute to use a phrase that's defined under Minnesota law and then require the reader to look to the laws of another state to determine whether or not that statute has been satisfied. If that's what the legislature intended, that's what they would have put. They simply would have put under the jurisdiction of the pursuing officer, arresting officer. But even if the state were correct in that assessment, that in fact, we should look to the forum jurisdiction's powers of arrest and determine whether they were granted full powers of arrest, we have no record to do that here. They would still fail under that argument because there's no evidence before the court and there was no evidence presented to the jury on which they could have made that determination. This is an element of the offense that the state had to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. They also had to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that it was the lawful discharge of an official duty. And so when the state argues that we shouldn't look at the basis for the stop, I would suggest that in fact, much like a refusal case where probable cause becomes an element for a jury to consider, that is what we have here.
At some point, Minnesota officers joined in the chase, right?
Well, certainly one did.
Okay, so one officer joined in the chase and your client still did not pull over.
Yeah, so the question is one of sufficiency of evidence and the circumstantial evidence analysis as to whether or not the driver of that vehicle reasonably would have known or could have seen this additional officer, you know, join into the chase. And I don't think we have a factual record upon which a jury could reasonably do that, particularly with the officer stating that he was far enough behind that he still could smell the rubber from this tire, a very potent smell. And the fact that he arrived at the scene of the wreck so long after. I mean, we have to presume that this vehicle driving with one tire off would have a difficult time going exceptionally fast. And yet these officers were not right there on his tail or close by. And the one video we do have, and I'm not even clear if the court can view that video. We get kind of conflicting messages on what the Court of Appeals can review. But if the court can review that video, the video shows the appellant's vehicle very, very far in the distance. And I don't know, and the record doesn't demonstrate whether or not Officer O'Leary was a similar distance away and whether then therefore the driver could have known that there was this additional individual. With regard to the state's argument,
is this adding a defense to the law that says, well, I didn't know whether they had full arrest power, so I could just keep driving?
Well, it's an element of the offense. And so I guess that's a great question, right? I mean, what do we intend the jurors to determine when in a circumstance where we have multiple jurisdictions and a chase over state lines, whether or not that's included? I would suggest it absolutely is. It's an element that they were acting in a lawful discharge of an official duty. What else could it mean but for the jury to determine whether or not this person was being appropriately stopped by law enforcement on the date of the incident.
But that's some of the problem I'm having here. So the Minnesota officer joins the chase and knows that this person did not stop in South Dakota and still being chased in Minnesota. So your argument is your client has to know that a Minnesota police officer then joined in this chase in order to be found guilty?
I believe so. And I believe that's exactly what the definition states. And that definition is included within the fleeing statute. And that definition includes the requirement that they be granted full arrest powers. And Minnesota law defines what that means. And even if Minnesota law doesn't apply to that definition, we have no evidence from the state submitted to this trial or to this jury that would allow them to have concluded that. With regard to the issue as to sentencing, I'm not asking this court for an advisory opinion on what appropriate sentencing should be. I did cite some case law that indicates that ordinarily half the presumptive sentence would be appropriate for a probationary sentence. I would note that imposing the maximum amount appears to be an abuse of discretion if the court hasn't made specific findings justifying imposing the maximum possible sentence. And so the issue really is not one of asking this court what is the appropriate sentence. This court reviewing the district's court's order on this is to determine whether or not the district court order acted within its discretion and simply doing that without making findings to justify it. And I would suggest the record here does not support that, and therefore that sentence would be improper under that case law and then just under the broad discretion of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both, counsel, for your help today and your briefs. We will get a decision issued in the statutory timeframe, and that ends our calendar for today. So you may go ahead and log off, and thanks again.
Happy holidays.